This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This week, we should have been talking about the Claret's performance against Spurs, but headlines have now been dominated by Takeover Talk. This is the Known and Never podcast. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Known and Never podcast, which is now going to be put together a little bit more hastily than we first thought, because even though we had plans this week, guys, to record reaction to the Spurs game and to talk about our excitement at a much improved performance, albeit it didn't bring any points to fruition, we've been somewhat derailed. And all of you who are listening to this podcast will, of course, know what we are talking about. The headlines this week are being dominated by the imminent takeover of Burnley Football Club by one of two parties. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and joining me this week to discuss what on earth is going on in the boardroom at Turf Moor is Tom and George. Tom, George, before we get on, let's have a quick chat about what's happening. I'm just going to give a quick summary of where I think we are now. And guys, we are recording this Thursday night. It's 7:30. Sean Dyche is in his press conference ahead of the Chelsea game today. We've tried to get as much information from social media, from local news, from whatever we can get. And I think this is a summary where we are. Up to now, we thought that the Clarets were going to be taken over by the American consortium ALK Capital LLC. But it's emerged in the last 24 hours that a rival bid has come in for an Egyptian consortium who is being fronted by sports lawyer Christopher Nell and please forgive this pronunciation, but I believe it's Mohamed El Kashash, who are apparently wanting to pay more for the club. We believe that's around £200 million bid. And early reports were that the Egyptian consortium had already signed an SPA, they transferred funds, and it was as close as just needing to get over the Premier League's fit and proper persons test. Cue panic overnight, cue scrambling to find out what on earth what's going on. And today, Thursday, the newspaper talk has very much shifted back to ALK being back on the table and perhaps a preferred bidder as well. And we are wondering perhaps whether this El Kashash bid has been pushed into the media to try and spur the Americans on, or to maybe try and resurrect a deal which we thought was dead in the water. I think that's where we are right now. George, do you want to kick us off with this and just let us know essentially what was the immediate reaction when all this came out on social media?
Yeah, good evening, Natalie. So it sort of happened around 4:30 last night. It just suddenly seemed to, the news story broke everywhere. I mean, first it was the Athletic and the Mirror, and then as the night drew in, it was BBC Sport, and now today we've had Sky Sports reporting it, and it just seems to have come out of the blue, really. But I think why it's come out of the blue is it seems that they've been talking for a year, and now because the Chris Farnell EFL incident has been put behind them and he's now cleared to own a club technically, it suddenly burst into the public sphere. And it certainly burst into the Twitter Claret sphere last night. And let me tell you, the reaction wasn't good. I think we're going to go on to it a bit later about the reaction from Charlton fans, which, you know, I think is really interesting because Chris Farnell was involved with the club over the last year or so. But the immediate reaction on Twitter and, you know, just people I interacted with on Snapchat, my mates and everything, it's just, it seems horror more than anything. A surprise at the American deal seemingly falling through as of now, and then B, the track record of this Farnell bloke. So, yeah, the first immediate reaction is worry, and I think that's a sentiment shared by me as well, definitely.
Yeah. Tom, I think I'd probably share that as well. And I think we've talked about this on previous podcasts and we've talked about this offline as well, in that we were all relatively comfortable with the Americans taking over. I think we'd all got to the point where we didn't necessarily need new owners to be Burnley fans. I didn't particularly have that as my absolute criteria. I was quite happy for complete strangers to come in, as long as they did pass the fit and proper test, that they were bona fide, genuine owners, that they had the money behind them to do what we wanted to do, and that they were going to take the club to their heart. Obviously, I think now the emergence of the Egyptian, and particularly Chris Farnell as well, is a little bit different. Before we sort of go on to the background of the second bid, this Egyptian bid, I don't know whether I'm feeling this. Are you feeling, Tom, that there's any credit in these rumours that this second bid might have been leaked to either bring ALK back to the table or to basically get them to pull the finger out a bit? Or does that not wash with you? I don't really know how I feel about that.
Yeah, it's quite a difficult one to get your head around without really knowing all the ins and outs of what's going on in the background. From what I've read, the Egyptian consortium's been in talks for the better part of a year. I think it's obvious that Garlick has been trying to sell for a while now. It's always going to be the case that there's probably going to be more than one interested party for a Premier League club. And I suppose it's all about the timings, and it's all about where the leaks have come from as well. I don't know enough to know where the leaks have come from, but it would seem to make sense, putting two and two together, that we heard about the Americans a few weeks ago, potential that they are the preferred bidder or the bidder that got furthest along at that point. And you know, it may well be, there was a lot of talk in the last few weeks that it seemed to be going quiet on that front. And maybe it is a bit of a ploy from our side to try and put the pressure on that bid coming through, if that is indeed the preferred bid. From what we understand about both parties, and obviously knowing that Mike Garlick is a Burnley fan, and I do think, whatever anybody says, I do think he has the best interest of the club at heart. And I do think he would want to sell it to the people that he believes would be best for the club. From what we've read about the two bids, you'd have to imagine that the Americans are going to be the better of the two. So if you look at it through that prism, then yeah, quite possibly the timing of this news and the fact that this is coming out now, and the fact that it seems to have gone from no talk of it whatsoever to we're at a late stage and they just need to get it ticked by the Premier League. Perhaps that is a bit of a ploy to speed things up for the American consortium. Maybe if they need to part with a little bit more money to put the pressure on them to do that. I think probably at the minute, that's looking at the track record of this Farnell chap. I think that's probably what we're all hoping is the case as well.
Yeah, I think I probably agree with that as well. Like I say, I was relatively comfortable with the American deal, and I wasn't necessarily initially sceptical of the Chris Farnell deal either, just because I was just like, oh great, you know, oh God, we are popular. And when you see headlines of a £200 million takeover, you just think, wow, that's exciting. And I've got to say, actually, it's one thing I would put a big pause on here, and I think people need to bear this in mind. When people say it's, and the headlines say that it's a £200 million takeover, I just want people to be clear that that is the money that this consortium are going to be paying for the shares. So that is for the current shareholders. They will get paid for the club. That is not £200 million that's going into the club. That's what the shareholders are being paid for their shares in the club. So yeah, I just want you to be very clear, listeners, that, you know, when you hear these headlines about there's a £200 million takeover, that isn't £200 million in the bank for Burnley that we can suddenly go out and start playing on players. We don't yet know, and are unlikely to know, what level of investment will be put directly into the club as a result of the takeover. We only know roughly what they are being paid for their shares. So we just need to bear that in mind when we're talking about what this means for us going forward. And I think I think then, George, we probably need to address what Tom mentioned then is, I guess, assessing the two bids. Now, there's not an awful lot we can say about the ALK bid because it's been very much closed behind closed doors. We've not heard an awful lot about it. But it does also seem to be that there's a lot of information being put out about the Chris Fennell, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Fennell, his involvement in this. And I think it's probably because of his very colourful history and the just the sheer level of controversy that surrounds his character. Now, listeners, we do need to be very careful here. This is a podcast that we are obviously putting out there for listeners to listen to. And I would stress here now that the information that we're about to set out to you and we're going to debate is not information that's been verified. We don't know whether it's fact or whether it's just speculation. A lot of it is paper talk. A lot of it is fan talk. A lot of it is Twitter talk. We cannot vouch for whether this information is verified. We cannot vouch for whether it's accurate. All we are doing now is discussing what's being sent to us by other football fans and what is being reported in the press as being concerns about particularly Chris Fennell and whether or not he is the right candidate to be put forward. So I'm just going to put that disclaimer out there right now. George, do you want to talk us through the first element of this, if you've got it? Because the biggest thing I think that people are concerned about with Chris Fennell being involved in the club is this EFL ban that he has served and has now been released about. Can you give us any more information about that?
Yeah, so I'm just looking at the I'm just looking at the Sky Sports article. As you say, it's important that we put out the right information here. And it was, I feel like this whole bid has come into public because Fennell's had his disqualifying condition lifted by, and it's an independent arbitration panel. Now, that panel and the condition he had placed on him prevented him from becoming a director of a football club. So essentially he was banned from becoming a director. And this is when he failed the like owners and directors test when he was attempting to take over Charlton Athletic. Now, I think probably is a good starting point for us is last night, I think both me and Tom saw this and it was just a Charlton fan's reaction to the rumours. And he was trying to warn the Burnley fans of what we could be getting into. So I think it's important to stress that this is the views of Steve, a Charlton fan. And he just said, Burnley fans, as a Charlton fan, can I please advise you, you know, to think less about signings in this takeover and more about the long-term future of your club? And then he goes on to address the worries over Fennell. He says he's constantly been alleged to be involved in some of the worst events in recent footballing history. So he's this is definite. He's been involved with Chelino at Leeds, Bury, Bolton, Charlton. He was a director at Wigan back in the day. And Steve just says it's long been alleged that his desire to take over clubs is to asset and cash strip. This was heavily rumoured with Charlton and an alleged £3 million disappeared from the club left by the previous owner. The plan was to appoint Dave Jones, then head of management team, to sell a few of the assets. This plan was thwarted when Charlton fans, and this was all over social media over the summer, they protested at his head office and actually caught him in the room with this Dave Jones, who's like the asset seller. Now, aside from this, Steve says, you know, he's totally inept, would have gotten away with it at Charlton if he was actually good at his job, but his series of mistakes had him ousted and banned from the EFL. Now, this ties up because his ban that has been overturned by the EFL was, he claimed that he'd forgotten to tick the box, which said he was also a director at a company that had interests in Charlton. So it was like, I can't remember what you call it, like when you're interested in one thing, but you've got a divulging interest. Is it competing interest? Someone help me out here.
Yeah, it's conflict of interest, I think, more than anything, yeah.
That's it. So it was a conflict of interest that he'd failed to notify the EFL about. Now, he's gone on to argue that this is just because he failed to tick a box, and he was cleared of that on Wednesday. So that's why I think, obviously, this news has come to light now. So I think it was just important to put a Charlton's fan perspective on there, just to kick us off with, you know, maybe the notorious past of this bloke and some of the clubs he's been involved with and how they... the state of them clubs now, or the state of which they're not in, i.e. Bury.
Yeah, I think one of the problems that Burnley fans have got with this character in particular is that a very simple Google check of this character, Tom, doesn't make particularly pleasant reading. And I'm glad that George mentioned that, because I did want to try and see both sides of the argument here. And yes, it isn't particularly comfortable reading knowing that your potential future owner has been subject to an EFL ban. But like I say, his genuine justification for that is that it was an administrative error, and he had accidentally forgotten to tick a box in a form that declared his interest in as a directorship in an interested firm. And the fact that EFL ban has now been overturned does tell you something. At some point, I know that the EFL standards are different to the Premier League standards, but we still got to bear in mind here, Burnley fans, that he has had that ban overturned, and the EFL would not have overturned that ban if they didn't think that he was now fit and proper and capable of being able to own a football club. I think for me, Tom, the bits that maybe stick out for me more are he seems to have a history of trying to push, let's call them, less than credible people to the forefront of clubs. And I'm going to bring the Leeds thing in here now, because as George mentioned, he was heavily involved in trying to mastermind the Chileno takeover. And we know that Leeds fans were immensely concerned with that takeover, and that gentleman wasn't particularly desirable in terms of what he looked like on paper anyway. You know, the Chileno himself was serving two suspended convictions for fraud. And I spoke to a couple of Leeds fans who said that there was a bizarre situation during that whole takeover where Chris Farnell had positioned himself in the club and actually telephoned, and I remember this at the time, he telephoned, McDermott was the manager at the time, and he then called him and sacked him over the telephone. But less than 24 hours later, McDermott was then reinstated. And Tom, you must remember this because I know I remember it. But then the Leeds fan was saying that at the same time, Farnell was very much then shipped out of the club. I think, Tom, where I'm coming from with that is, and again, this is all speculation. We can only report on what we're being told. We've got no idea whether this is verified or not. But one of the things, Tom, you and I have always talked about is the people that we want to be at the heart of the club. And this guy doesn't really sound like somebody we want. Is that fair?
I think it's whatever happens, it is going to be a massive departure from the model that we're used to, which is, you know, as you say, a local man, a fan of the club, operating in the way that we operate. And I think the American bid does seem to be slightly more holistic in the way that they're talking about sports science and things. You can sort of join up the dots and see why there'd be an interest there. As you say, the previous track record of Farnell, it doesn't suggest that he is a particularly committed football fan. It doesn't suggest that he's got any particular commitment to football in the Northwest. Quite a peripatetic directorial career so far in the game. He's been at a lot of clubs. He doesn't appear to have stayed very long at any of them for a variety of reasons. And I don't think you get an idea from his track record so far in football as to what his ideas would be with the club, or what he would be looking to do to improve it, to push it onto the next level, other than, as you say, the fact that a lot of the clubs that he's been involved in have subsequently not performed very well or have had problems with their ownership. So yeah, it doesn't appear to bode well from that regard. What you said about him kind of being more of a facilitator for other businessmen, or to help people potentially come in, and then, as you say, it leads to his sort of gone to one side as soon as Chileno had taken over, then that raises questions about the Egyptian chap at the head of the consortium. Is it Mohamed El Kashashi? From what I've read about him, and of course, like everybody else, I'd never heard of him until yesterday. He's worked in, I think, the restaurant industry in the Middle East. But he appears to have been like a high-level manager for companies. But there isn't anything on his CV that says to me that he could have amassed the wealth of £200 million. And from what I know about Chris Farnell, I don't get the impression that he's got a wealth of £200 million. So that does make me question, where has that bid come from? Who is putting up the money? As I said, I don't know. I don't know a lot about Kashashi. He doesn't strike me, from what I can read about him, as a man who's got that kind of money. So is there someone else involved? Is it a consortium? Is there someone sort of who's more in the shade, and perhaps they're putting Farnell as the figurehead for now? It's it raises a lot of questions. And the fact that they push this chap front and centre, if there is someone behind with a bit more money, might lead you to question either their motivations or perhaps their savvy. So, yeah, it doesn't make good reading on the surface, and it would be interesting to have a lot of that clarified.
I was thinking the exact same thing, Tom. I mean, I just one look at this guy's LinkedIn page and you just see like a bunch of middle management roles in albeit impressive companies, but that doesn't seem like it's going to have built up £200 million worth of wealth. So it's the question of, well, where is he borrowing this money from? You know, the Glaziers, they went into United and bought the club with just a lot of borrowed money, and you see how that's going. The Venkis borrowed a lot of money themselves. And actually, the company that El Kashashi, oh, that's going to be a tricky one, isn't it? I really hope this deal doesn't go through. The company that he works for is now in liquidation when you go on their website. So, yeah, it's a really worrying one. Where's the money actually coming from? These two almost seem like dumb and dumber because they went to Charlton together and that all went pig's ear. And now they're coming into Burnley. So yeah, it's a really quite a worrying one. Not just on the history of Farnell with the, I mean, when he went to Swansea, he was accused of bullying in that takeover deal. You've seen how that takeover's gone for Swansea. So yeah, there's just so many questions about this deal and the reputation of the people involved.
Yeah, that's true, George. And I think for me, I think there's a couple of points there that we come to. Obviously, we don't particularly like what we're reading about the personality and the controversy surrounding Chris Farnell. And one of the points I was going to raise actually was, you know, he's a lawyer, he's a partner in his own law firm. And, you know, on the opposite side of this controversy, lawyers are supposed to hold themselves out as, you know, officers of the court and trustworthy and reputable people. You know, we've got professional standards that we have to abide by. So I was going to use that as to say, look, you know, we've also got to give him this. You know, he is a lawyer, you know, but then I've also just this moment read on the Sky Sports website that he is being investigated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority about his actions during his time with Charlton earlier this year. So, listen, I'm trying my best to be balanced here. I'm trying my best not to pile in on this guy and turn this into a let's just completely rip into a guy who we don't know and just rehash all of these things that fans and social media and the press are reporting. But at the moment, I'm struggling to find anything that we can flip onto the other side as a, okay, but on the other hand, you know, the angel on the shoulder, you know, he's done this, he's done that, these are the good points about him. Everything we seem to be reading just does not make pleasant reading at all. And even if we just take this at a very basic level, you know, him and the two of them have had takeover attempts for Bury, Charlton and Leeds, all of which have failed. There's been controversy around the Charlton issue. There's this EFL ban around that time as well. And it's the people, and I think Tom's made a really good point there. If Mohamed El Kashash is in the hospitality industry, doesn't appear to have the wealth behind him in his personal capacity that would be able to bankroll the deal and get the money going forward, then rightly, who is bankrolling this in the background? And when you look at particularly the Leeds takeover and the characters that Farnell was trying to push to the forefront of Leeds, I think it's justifiable for us as fans of the club to say, hang on a minute, who is this and where is this money coming from and who are you people and why do you want to land on us when it could be, you know, it could end up the same way as those. Now on the flip side, Tom, and I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that there aren't disadvantages to the American deal. But, you know, the ALK Capital deal is being run by a gentleman called Alan Pace, who's a Wall Street executive. Now, straight away, obviously, we've got finance there. We've got finance experience. And the companies that he manages and runs, I think you touched on at the beginning, are very much based on recruitment and sports science and how you get grassroots, you know, things like that, the lower levels of the football, and how you get those push forward and how you develop junior members and bring them through the ranks. And actually, just one of their taglines on their website describes them as a high caliber team of professionals with decades of experience in senior operating roles. And it just, you know, listen, they're Americans, and Americans are great at PR and they're great at business lines. But Tom, already, you're already thinking, well, I'd much prefer ALK. But does the question not remain the same in that, where's ALK's money coming from? You know, but we still have to ask that question.
Yeah, 100%. And I think in some ways, and I don't know if these things are connected, but in some ways it's quite convenient, I think, for ALK that this chap, this Farnell, is at the head of the rival bid, because a lot of questions are being thrown his way. And I think now a lot of fans are starting to think, well, if it's one or the other, then I'd much rather it was the Americans, based on the fact that they don't have Chris Farnell heading them. And it might smooth the way for the Americans. And perhaps the timing of this leak and the information that's come out, perhaps that's related to it in some way. I don't know. But I think had the Egyptian bid not been on the table, then we'd be asking probably slightly more searching questions of the other bid. I think, like you say, with the background of Alan Pace, the fact that he's a Wall Street executive, like you say, he's likely to have more kind of capital. He's likely to know people who are financiers who have got more capital themselves. So I think that does give him that air of legitimacy that perhaps the other bid doesn't have. And the fact as well, like you say, that he's got these investments in sports companies and sports science and data and things like that, it makes you slightly question less what the motives are, because you think, you can see the joined up thinking there. You know, the owner at Brentford has a similar interest outside of being the Brentford owner, and the two things work side by side, and that's why Brentford are doing so well. So maybe that's part of it as well, the fact that he's got that kind of background in sports, and obviously the fact that it's a bit more visible where his wealth might be or who his backers might be. But yeah, you're right. It's still something that we'd have to question. And I think I've said in the past on here, certainly on Twitter and elsewhere, it would upset me, I have to say, if we were to be taken over, and I think we all realise that probably Garlic's time has come to an end. He has taken us as far as he can. And we're at the point where it does look like it's either Garlic or Dyche that will be gone in the near future. And I think I'll probably speak for everyone when I say I'd probably rather Garlic went than Dyche. But at the same time, it will be a sad day when we stop having our kind of unique, quite unique in modern day football, that we're owned and run by fans. We're doing it without massive outside investment. And I think whoever the owners are, we'll always have to question their motives, because they won't be as pure as the motives that the owners of the club are currently.
I'd agree on casting a shadow over the ALK bid as well. I think it is obviously, as Natalie suggested, it's easy for fans to now think, oh, yeah, let's get ALK in. No, not Chris Farnell. But at the same time, you know, if ALK aren't willing to put up the money to buy the shares in the first place, then who's to say they'd actually be pumping in the money to the club to actually improve on? Because the only reason we're getting rid of Garlic is, he's selling the club, is not because he's a bad owner. It's just because we've reached, you know, the end of his tenure where he can actually put enough money in. And from what I was hearing with the ALK bid, it was more below 150 million, and that was where the price was being haggled at. So if the Sky Sports and everyone's to be believed, and this new takeover of bids of 200 million, then I think you just have to question whether ALK would be willing to spend that much, and then B, if they weren't willing to spend enough to actually outbid another takeover rival, then, you know, are they that committed? Do they have that much capital that there'd actually be an improvement on the ownership we have? So I think it's definitely important to just, you know, take a balanced and nuanced view of this. And it's not just a case of being desperate for the ALK bid to come in now that, you know, Chris Farnell's gotten himself involved.
Yeah, it's the lesser of the two evils, isn't it? It's like if we're sitting here and we're saying, well, we don't want Chris Farnell, Farnell to come in, so we want ALK, but ALK fall away, we're then put in a position where it's either Farnell or nothing. And you just got to look at that and you think, well, as Burnley fans, Do we want the investment at any cost? Do we want to take the risk on these owners to get the investment in and maybe secure our position? Because we are in quite a precarious position, and I still maintain the view that I don't think we're going to progress under the current board. I just don't think their personal wealth, and you know, nor should it, you know, we shouldn't be expecting them to just keep bankrolling us from their personal wealth. I think what worries me more about the current board is that we don't seem to be pursuing or taking advantage of better commercial opportunities. We seem to just every single season maintain the position that we rely on the Premier League money, and that's everything. And that, you know, we don't know what happens behind the scene. The club could very well be trying every single year to get, you know, better sponsorship deals or better whatever. We aren't a particularly fashionable club, and people, you know, we don't have a great image, so people maybe don't want to pay. But I am frustrated, you know, whilst I don't think that our board should be having to put their personal money in all the time, I'm equally as frustrated that we don't seem to be exploring, and we don't seem to have taken advantage of the greater monetary opportunities that are out there that come from being part of such a global brand that is the Premier League. So for both of those reasons, I think it's time for this board to go on. But George, I think I'm still in that position where if it's sell to Farnell, Farnell, I keep calling him Farnell, it's Farnell, isn't it? Sell to Farnell and this Egyptian consortium with all the risks that come with it, or stick with Garlick and the board as it is, I think I'd probably stick. Is that naive?
I think I'd have to agree with you. I think it would be interesting. I mean, you know, if Sky are to be believed, this is literally just waiting the Premier League rubber stamp, and the contracts have already been signed. So maybe this talk of ALK versus this new takeover bid, it's non-existent because the contracts have been signed. It's already going through. So I think what would be interesting is, say, you know, it becomes announced, you know, this takeover is happening. Would there be, as we've already touched upon, there's no good news to be found anywhere about either of these guys. Farnell's got a dodgy history, to say the least, and the thing is, we don't really know anything about the El Kashashi bloke. So I think it would be interesting if the club actually came out with a positive spin on it and maybe actually gave us a background of the two guys, because Chris Farnell's background's publicly known and contentious, and the other bloke we just don't know much about. So it would be interesting if they managed to put a positive spin on it, and or just, it's not even a positive spin, it's just giving us information, because as we've already mentioned, we just don't know where the money's coming from, if there's a secret party behind it. It's really deeply concerning, and especially with the calibre of a bloke that Chris Farnell appears to be. So, yeah, it's seriously worrying for me.
Yeah. I mean, we've got to bear in mind as well, I'm not sure I particularly believe this story that Sky said about an SPA already being signed and it's just a case of rubber stamping. That doesn't make any logical sense to me. And I don't believe that that is the case. And actually, if an SPA had already been signed, they wouldn't still be having talks with ALK. That would have gone now. I know how this field works, and I'd be surprised. It just doesn't, from what I've read, and you've got to bear in mind that a lot of it might just be paper talk, I don't personally believe that an SPA has been signed. I don't believe that's the case. So, Tom, let's put us back into the hypothetical scenario that ALK bid falls away and they don't want to pursue it. Now, we've got to bear in mind as well, actually, before we move on to this, what we're being told is that ALK have the money there. They are still keen to progress, even irrespective of Claret's current form. They are a huge fan of Daesh, and they want to be in before January because they want to bring players in January to give us the best possible opportunity to survive in the second half of the season, assuming that we're still in the bottom three by then. Let's say that doesn't happen, and let's say that the price that Garlick either ALK falls away and they don't want it anymore, or Garlick and the board decide that they want to capitalise on the higher price being offered for their shares by Chris Farnell and the Egyptian consortium. And, you know, it's within his prerogative. He's invested his own money in the club. He wants to just get paid more and sell to them. What's the feel that you've seen on social media in terms of a fan revolt? Or is there anything in that sense that the fans feel that they can do to stop this from happening?
I've been thinking about this quite a lot today. It is interesting because in the past I've kind of looked at a lot of clubs that have had these dodgy takeovers or dodgy owners. And some clubs are a lot more kind of proactive than others, some clubs' fan bases. So, for example, Charlton, I thought they were fantastic, the work they did against Roland du Châtelet. They were proactive in stopping. But I think you will see on social media that some Charlton fans went to Chris Farnell's office at a point where he was trying to get his takeover through. So they're proactive. And I've often kind of wondered what the reaction would be from our fan base if something similar happened. Now, I think the biggest problem that we're going to have as a fan base, if we want to kind of show any opposition or resistance to this takeover, is that you can't unite the fans physically at the minute because of the coronavirus situation, because there's nobody at the grounds. It's so much harder to coordinate everything other than via social media. And there are great things you can do via social media. We saw that with the food bank, the food bank protest the other week. But in terms of kind of getting in the way of this takeover, stopping it, I haven't seen any positive reaction on social media really. But how does that translate into real world opposition to this takeover? You can get people going down protesting outside the ground. How many I live in Derby. I haven't been up to Burnley since the last home game in March. It's a tier three area. I don't know what the laws are regarding it, but certainly not encouraged to travel up there. You can't have a crowd of more than six gathering outside. So how is that going to work? How proactively can you present a united front to any potential owner? And I really don't see an answer to it other than petitions and things like that on social media, and how much of an impact that's going to make on things, I don't know. Hopefully people at the club, Mike Garlick, they're aware of what the prevailing opinion is on social media. Hopefully that's related to them in some way, if they're not just reading it themselves. And hopefully that does play a part in the thinking. And as George said earlier, if it is going to go ahead, and if that is who they are going to sell to, at least have some explanation, justification as to why that's the road that they're going down. But I think it's going to be really difficult if the takeover does happen, say before January, as is being discussed. It's going to be really, really difficult to put any kind of united front up against it, unfortunately.
Yeah. Oh, it's all very depressing. I think I'm quite cynical in terms of how much impact the fans can have. I've got to say, I know I agree with you. I think Charlton were fantastic when they were going through the problems they had. I'd also give a particularly special shout out to Blackpool fans as well, who went on such a long, long, long crusade to get their owners out of the club and finally got their wishes and are starting to rebuild again. So it can be done. But yeah, you're right. It relies heavily on physical contact. And I think George has just put in our show comments. He's right. You know, you can put things out on social media, but it's just an echo chamber. And it's like, and how do you do it? But actually, I'm also more concerned as to, what does protests actually do? If I'm a consortium and I want to pay 200 million for a football club, and I've got my reasons for doing that, and I want to run it as a business, and even if I want to asset strip it, or if we say that our worst fears about Chris Farnell are brought to fruition, and he's got his agenda, what he wants to do to the club, is he really going to give a monkeys about 5,000 Burnley fans outside Turf Moor waving the picket forks and signing petitions saying we don't want you to run our club? He's just going to carry on regardless. I don't really, and it worries me just that. Now, I fully expect that the Clarets Trust and the various supporters groups are all over this at the moment. And even though we've not heard from him this season yet, as you all know, Liam, who is on the board of the Clarets Trust, is part of the None and Ever team. We've just struggled really to pin him down recently to be able to speak to him. As you can imagine, with pay-per-view and the takeover talks and everything like that, the Clarets Trust is a shareholder in the club, albeit a minority one that doesn't have voting rights, from what I understand. George, have you just joined the board of the Clarets Trust as well? Have I just missed an email on that? Hello, George?
We may have lost George.
Yeah, I think we've lost George. We'll bring him back, listeners. He'll come back in when we're halfway through. I'm pretty sure, Tom, I've not made that up. I'm pretty sure I've seen on our text group that he's joined the board. But anyway, we know that Liam's been trying to fill us in with what he can and what it's appropriate to say internally. You know, he is planning on coming onto the show as quickly as he can and giving us an update on what the Clarets Trust is doing to sort out the pay-per-view debacle. And also, we've got George in our chat, but going, hello, can you hear me? And we're like, no, we can't. Poor George. We're going to try and get George back. I don't want to interrupt the flow of the podcast. We're going to keep going. And George is probably going to dip in and dip out, I think. I think we'll get him on shortly to try and give us some indication as to what's happening. But at the meantime, Tom, it feels a little bit like we're a bit helpless, doesn't it? It feels like we're just getting emotional and firing out on Twitter, and it just doesn't really feel like there's anything we can do, does there?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a difficult one to get your head around because it's the nature of football is that, you know, the clubs now are all PLCs and they can be bought and sold, and the fans aren't really a part of that. And it's something that, you know, we've been quite lucky in that we've not had to deal with in the past. And obviously, it's looking like it might happen now. So it's something that, if it does come to pass, perhaps it's best not to get too despondent too early. I mean, as you said earlier, you know, it's not just because it's being reported that it's got so far, it's at an advanced stage. It doesn't mean it is going to happen. There's still twists and turns, I'm sure, to come. Even after that, we saw with Leeds United, you know, as we said, Farnell, Chelino, and Farnell were working together at the start. Fairly quickly after that, Farnell was gone. So, assuming that the chap that we're getting, that Farnell's bringing in, isn't as bad as Chelino, perhaps it won't be that bad from that perspective. Other things as well, I mean, the major flaw that you get with owners coming in is that, you know, they sack the manager very quickly. Now, I'd be absolutely gobsmacked if any of them were stupid enough to give Dyche the boot as soon as they came in. That really would turn the fans, if nothing else. And let's be fair, I don't think Farnell's got the bravery to ring up Sean Dyche and tell him his services are no longer required. So perhaps we wouldn't have to worry about that. And then perhaps as well, we might see a little bit more investment in the January window, and we could take stock from there if we can secure another season in the Premier League. So, yeah, it's going to be difficult to stop anything. And so perhaps it's best just to try and clutch at the straws we've got, try and look on the bright side for now and cross the bridges that might appear when we come to them.
I agree. And actually, we've got George back. George, welcome back. We thought we'd lost you for a little while there, but we've managed to claw you back into the fold. We thought Tom and I were going to have to finish off the podcast. Interestingly, one of the things that I've read, George, is that the Clarets' worrying Premier League form is a factor that's potentially stalling talks for a takeover bid, which brings us quite nicely on to the game at Monday night against Spurs, which ended up being an actually quite good performance by the Clarets, albeit not the result we were expecting, but not the result we wanted. Clarets most definitely looked like they were back to themselves on Monday, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. Just before I mention this, I'm surprised that it's stalling talks, because the worrying form should make Mike Garlick think, quick, let's sell the club now before they're relegated. Because there's not a chance anyone's coming in for us once we go down. It should be speeding up talks. True. But yeah, Monday night, you know, it was really nice to see just that the team was playing a lot more like themselves and backing up the West Brom game where, okay, disappointed not to win, but we were saying last week it was really nice to see them playing, you know, similar to how they played in Project Restart, solid base and working on from there. So it was great seeing. It's all well and good doing that against West Brom, but we took it to Tottenham, who were a good team this season. And, you know, it just goes to show that we've not lost our touch. And, you know, I'm quietly hopeful that if we carry on playing like that, things can get a lot better in the near future. So, yeah, definitely really nice to see us looking so solid. Okay, unfortunate with them winning and nicking it. But at the end of the day, it could have easily been us. We didn't create much. But, yeah, just playing nice and solid, good defending. And that's what we do well. And it's what we were worried about with this season was, you know, keeping clean sheets or keeping the goals down. But we keep Tottenham to, you know, one goal, and we should be all right for the near future.
Yeah, I think, Tom, that we actually ended up creating a lot more chances than Sky gave us credit for. Sky were being arseholes on Monday night in the studio. They were really starting to pee me off, if you pardon my French. I very nearly properly swore then. And they were all like, oh, this is hard to watch, and, you know, Burnley, it's the systematic team, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, oh, shut up, you're boring me now. But I thought, Tom, that we did, we had quite a few decent chances, and we actually managed to get the ball in quite a bit. How did you think that Ashley and Chris Wood dealt with that up front? Because obviously, the more we saw that Ashley Barnes got the nod ahead of Jay, which I would have preferred the other way around. But in the absence of some clinical chances being created from midfield, I thought they did all right together, actually.
Yeah. And the reaction to Barnes starting again was pretty vociferously against it, I think, on social media. I was quite surprised by that. I think he's obviously not back up to full fitness yet, but he does give us a dimension that I think we do lack without him there. I didn't think he played that badly. I suppose that the main problem with him there is that we've got the tendency to revert to like the long ball, the hit and hope. And there was less of that definitely than there was, for example, in the Newcastle game. He put himself about well. He buys, I'll use the word buys, those little free kicks. I think he's lacking a bit of sharpness. I think Matt made the comment in the chat that there was that chance in the second half where Wood knocked it down beautifully, and perhaps Barnes at full fitness, or Barnes of the European season, maybe he just hits that first time and scores, and he had one too many touches and was closed down. But I think we've seen little elements of that sharpness still being there. His instinctive finish for the one where he was offside, that was a good finish. I don't have a massive problem with Barnes and Woods playing up front. I think I probably would prefer to see Rodriguez in the next game, like you say, just to mix it up a little bit, give him an hour and see how that goes. But I thought he did all right, actually. And I think you can see he's getting better and he's getting sharper with each game.
Do you think there was a couple of shouts for a couple of red cards, Tom? I think certainly, well, it annoyed me actually, because Jose, being the clown that he is, was going on after the game about what a great job the referee did, because he resisted giving Ashley Barnes a red card. I was like, there was very much a second red card shout there, which was probably more so, but I think we could have easily seen two reds.
I think probably the elbow, you could have seen it given just purely from how Aldevaro came off. You know, he's got the cut and he's bleeding. It didn't look deliberate to me from when you see it back. You know, his eyes are on the ball the whole time. He doesn't do the Andy Carroll of looking over his shoulder and make sure he swings the elbow into someone's face like he does 10 times a game. I remember it was like 15, 20 years ago in football, you used to see red cards all the time for elbows. Gareth Taylor used to be one who used to get sent off for an elbow. Every time you played Sheffield United, someone would get sent off for an elbow when Warnick was manager. But you don't very often see it now. I was thinking of the one when we played Palace, Jordan Ayew elbowed Brownhill. And that was a lot more deliberate than the Barnes one for me. And that didn't get a red. So while it could have been, I don't think we could have complained too much if it had been, I think in the modern game, if you're going to be consistent, you probably would say it was a yellow at best. And I don't think he should have been sent off, really. The Spurs one, is that the Lamella one on McNeil near the end?
Yeah, where he stood was. I've literally just put in the chat. I was like, so much has happened this week. Me and George were both saying, like, I almost can't remember what happened to the Spurs game. We might have to blag this a little bit. And I do remember there being a very deliberate. I remember being absolutely raging at the time and thinking that should be a red. And he did. His studs were off the ground. It was a reckless challenge. And Sky just seemed to brush over it, like, oh yeah, no, that, you know, it's just an accident. That's fine. And I didn't think it was. I thought that was a bigger shout for a red.
Yeah, it wasn't a very good challenge in that his, like you say, his studs are up, his foot was high. I think it would have been very harsh to send him off for that, because I don't think he's caught him particularly badly. I think McNeil's made a bit of a meal of it, maybe trying to get him sent off, or at least trying to get the free kick. I think it was not a clever challenge, but I don't think there was enough contact really to say that was a red card either. And again, maybe a yellow would have been fair. But I think if you know, Barnes didn't get sent off, Lamella didn't get sent off, I'm not going to gripe about either decision. I thought that was fair enough.
I agree. Well said. Disappointed though, George, to lose in the end. It did feel like we were doing our best to try and get a point out of that game again.
Yeah, the most disappointing thing was just the way we lost. You know, conceding from a corner like that. It's just very un-Burnley-like. And it was even more annoying because we had really controlled their attacking threat. It's all well and good, BBC and Sky, you know, writing all these columns. Oh, Son and Harry Kane, what a partnership again. But it wasn't like, you know, they had this amazing free-flowing move and linked up. Okay, it was a good training ground routine for the corner, but all game, you know, we limited them to barely anything. That was their first shot on target, that the actual goal in the 75th minute. So, yeah, definitely disappointing to get a draw, but not to get a draw, I wish, to lose the game. But before the game, I wouldn't have expected anything. So to come away with a credible performance and only losing 1-0, you know, we'll take it. And maybe if we play similar against Chelsea, we'll kick on and maybe get a point or more next time. So it's just a lot more about the performance for me than unfortunately losing it in the end.
Yeah, I think it was really good. And what I would say to that, George, actually, I think I was worried about some of the upcoming fixtures, but after watching the two games last week, so particularly watching Chelsea against United, which quite frankly was dull as anything, and two sides very much not firing on all cylinders, and then backing that up with our performance against Spurs, I genuinely wouldn't surprise if this win that's coming would be against Chelsea on Saturday. Got to say, though, it's come out this afternoon, we've lost JBG again for a calf niggle, which means he's going to be out for 25 months. Jesus, we are struggling to get some consistency in this side, aren't we? That is a disappointing news.
It's not even like it happened in a game as well. Like, we did it not for our eyes. I know he came off late and we brought J-Rod on, but it didn't seem like that was it didn't seem like it was an injury issue. And it just came a bombshell today after the bombshell of the takeover last night. Oh, by the way, Dash says, you know, Goodmore's got a calf niggle and, again, we have no timescale on his return. God, and I was really looking forward to seeing him get a prolonged spell in the team. He played really well against Spurs. I think it's important to note both him and McNeil, I thought, were both really good. And Chris Wood and Barnes up top, they posed a threat. Yeah, really disappointing to lose him to the injury. And, you know, it just highlights what a failure the summer transfer window was. In the fact, you know, not bringing in an extra right winger.
Indeed, isn't that just the bane of our life, though? We're always talking about the implications of a poor transfer window. Tom, any word from you before we leave? We're going to wrap it up this week because I think we've talked enough about takeovers. We've talked about Spurs. It feels a little bit like I can't really remember what happened against Spurs now. But have you got anything that you want to add before we move on?
No, I think probably same as has been said. Moving in the right direction. Bit of a shame that we couldn't nick a win, but if we keep playing like that for the rest of the season, we'll be all right, I think.
I'd like to add something, Natalie. You were just saying then. the bane of our lives, okay. The transfer window. I remember, you know, 2014, 2015, you know, listening to the podcast back then, and it was Jamie Smith, I think at that time, talking about, you know, Brian Stockdale, and it's just it's Groundhog Day again. The morning of the podcast has moved on so much, and yet we're still talking about the exact same issues.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I blame the transfer window for us having to try each season to find different ways to entertain you and finding ways that we can make the podcast different and unique. And we can't because the transfer window. Let's wrap that up. Listen, guys, these are scary times for people who don't particularly like change and the obviously threat of maybe not the owners that we wanted taking over the club, and there'll be some things tonight that you don't particularly like hearing. So please try and stay calm. We can't do anything about it at the moment. Let's just see this ride out. Let's see what happens. You know, we might be in a position where neither of these bidders are ones we want. We might end up sticking with the current board and having to fight another season with what we've got. So let's just stay calm. Let's see how this plays out. We would love to hear your thoughts. Obviously, we have been trawling social media over the last 48 hours to try and get reaction to the takeover. We get it. We very much get the feeling that's coming out from the fans. There's not an awful lot of positivity out there. But we do want to hear what you want to say. So do tweet us at nonenever or send us an email at podcast@nonenever.net. Dave and I will be back. What day is it today? Tomorrow for the preview show, where we will be looking ahead to that game against Chelsea and giving you all the stats for that. Well, I won't, Dave will. And the team will be back next Tuesday with reaction to the Chelsea game. We will give you an update as to what's happening with the takeover, if anything else has happened. We're hopefully going to get Liam in as well to give us some news from the Clarets Trust. And George, actually, do you want to... You disappeared when we asked you whether you were joining the Clarets Trust board. You are, aren't you?
God, you've exposed a big transfer here, Natalie. This is
this
is the equivalent of the takeover news bursting into the sphere last night. But yeah, I think we're being introduced to each other. You know, it could be a possible transfer in the near future. Watch this space.
Excellent. Maybe I'm going to take over on the board instead and have a link to that just so that they can make you pull your finger out and do it quicker. Okay, well, I'm sorry for that spoiler alert. Liam's going to kill me when I do that. But we will get Liam on from the Clarets Trust because I do want to talk to him. I know a lot of you guys have been sending us messages wanting to talk and voice your concerns about PPV, pay-per-view TV, and what's happening with that. Liam has got loads of stuff to fill us in on, so we'll get him on as quickly as we can. My thanks as ever go to George and Tom for just having a chat about the takeover news and filling us all in on their opinions. Thanks, guys. Thanks to producer Matt for knitting it all together and getting it out there to you. To band Joyce for providing the music this week. I don't know if I can, or I am thanking our new voiceover guy. So I'm going to not do, and I'm going to get that from Matt, and I'll find out for next week whether we've got a new voiceover guy to thank. But thanks as ever go to you, the listener, for downloading and listening to this podcast. Your support is very much appreciated, and we would not be here without you. We will see you next week. In the meantime, take care, wear a mask, and look after yourselves. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the None and Ever podcast. Until next time.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.